Hi guys, my name is Segun Odejimi and I welcome you to this episode of Nollywood Backstories. So Nollywood Backstories is that podcast that attempts to have a conversation, you know, around the people, around the themes, around the events, you know, that have shaped in one way or the other the history of, you know, Nollywood as we know it today. On this episode, I have a critic with me, someone who has distinguished himself both locally and internationally, someone whose writings have appeared on numerous online and offline publications. And for several years, he was, you know, the West Africa editor of Music in Africa. And of course, he's pretty much widely respected. I still struggle with his surname. So if he needs to, you know, give me a knock on the head, he can probably attempt that when we meet up for drinks. So join me in welcoming, you know, of course, none other than Oriz Aiwohaiwolo. Thank you very much, Oriz, for joining me on this edition of Nollywood Backstories.
Yeah, thank you very much, Segun. But no thanks for the way you murdered my last name. It is Aiwohaiwolo, but do not try to pronounce it now. It's fine.
All right, cool. So let's start here. So, I mean, you studied pharmacy in school and almost everybody will wonder why or what led a pharmacist to Nollywood or to Nigerian music or to becoming a writer. I know there's the Hemingway story of his Paris Reviews, which of course, you know, you've at some point said it influenced you. So can we just talk briefly about that? I mean, the Hemingway story and you know, from a pharmacist transitioning into the Nigerian entertainment scene and becoming a writer, because, I mean, you've written for magazines and so on and so forth. You are actually passionate about writing. Let's trace that. How did that come about?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, once again, like I said earlier, it's, this is, I mean, okay, well, in hindsight, let me try and piece together the pieces. So let's see. I think from when I was quite young, I had an affinity for words. I remember at the time they used to make this joke that I had to be a lawyer or something because I just like to argue and all of those stuff when I was really, really young. This is like when I was like, I don't know, 5, 6 or 7. And then when I got into the University of Benin, of course, was to study pharmacy, but I think sometime, yeah, the Hemingway thing came about, I think my second or third year. I was always been a very bookish kind of human being, so I just really like books. So there was this guy who used to come to school to come and take all of our money if you're a book lover.
Yeah.
It was this book, bookseller guy. Exactly, you know, at every start of the semester, he would just show up here with these like canopies and just have all of these massive piles of books all over the place, you know. And then people like me now, like a moth to a flame, would have to always show up there. And so this meant that the chunk of my allowances used to wipe out like within the first 3-4 weeks of resumption because of this guy. Because who had like, he actually had like a bookstore in the town, you know, but used to come to us to the event frequently to come and take all of our money. Anyway, so I think one of those random days, I stumbled upon the Paris Review interview. So, of course, as everybody probably knows, the Paris Review runs like interviews writers, talk about their style, talk about how they came into writing, talk about their philosophy of writing. And so they had the second edition of the compilation. I think now they are up to like 8 or if not more than up to 15 or something. I'm not sure. I have the thing at home actually. Anyway, so one of the volumes, the second volume, had interviews with a bunch of people, including I think Lawrence Durrell, Patrick Ann Potter, was Marianne Moore. A bunch of people, and of course, Boris Pasternak, the Russian guy. And yes, there was this one with Ernest Hemingway. And so, after buying that particular book, like I said, a compilation of interview writers, I went to, I think I bought another, a collection of short stories as well, called The Experience of Fiction. And somehow got home. And of course, you know what's funny, or the coincidence was that in the Experience of Fiction, there was a story by Ernest Hemingway in that collection.
Okay.
But I wasn't really attracted by that one. But the interview with Hemingway in the compilation, I bought the interview, the Price Group interviews, just pretty much blew me away. It was, I think till today, it's still a very important document for, I think, anyone who wants to consider a life of writing.
Right.
Because there are things it says there that just feels like, if you are young, to be honest, it will probably grab you. And if you are older, you might learn a few things. One of the things about Hemingway that I think was important, or that is still probably important, is that for a bunch of writers after him, as in American literature, you either wanted to write like him or you wanted to write not like him. So it was like, whatever the case is, this guy was like an important figure in the stand. Let's put it that way, you know?
Yeah.
So you either had to go through him or go around him or turn away from him. But whatever the case, he was pretty much in the center.
Mm-hmm.
So for a young man with pretensions towards greatness, it felt to me like an important thing to become, an important person to want to emulate. Somebody who, I mean, this was like, I think Hemingway died, was it in the 50s now? And I was coming in 2000 and something.
Okay.
And I was still getting this what's the word now? This kind of attraction from what he had done. So for me, just felt like, you know, this was a guy to be. So I read a bit of the fiction stories in the other collection. And I think at the time I started getting infatuated, that's the word. Started falling in lust with I think Time Magazine. And for somebody, for me, a small town boy, I grew up in Lokoja with my mother. This kind of like widened the window into a level of sophistication that I felt was, what's the word? Was worth admiring.
Okay. You know? Yeah.
And I think so, but for film in particular, I think the important thing was the Time Magazine. There was a guy, the film critic at the time, he's late now, I think he died 5-6 years ago, Richard Collis, who just had this authority about the way he wrote reviews. I mean, it felt like if you were not in agreement with what he had said, there's something you didn't know, or maybe you knew too much. You know, whatever the case is, you needed to come to him with a bit of knowledge to be able to like argue with his positions about film. And it was just so learned. It was just like anyway, he sort of impressed me a lot with the way he wrote. His prose was joyful, it was fun to read, and he had the authority. And he has a lot of knowledge about film as well.
Yeah.
So between all of these things I was consuming at the time, and I remember again, like I said, I was really young, probably in my late teenage year. Yeah. If I go into school around 16. So yeah, I was quite young. So all of these things just kind of like impressed me and said, you know what, this was a thing to aspire to.
Yeah.
So of course all of this did not quite what come together for me at the time. But I think it was 2 or 3 years later, while I was still in school, I saw a music video with this song, very popular song, Kanye West. La la, wait till yes, can't tell me the name of the song, is Can't Tell Me Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember just thinking to myself that, wow, this was such a, I mean, you know, this was Kanye at the peak of his Kanye-ness, you know, his ego-driven music. And I felt that there will be a bunch of people who are going to talk about this song and this artist in the US, because of course Kanye is American. And I thought to myself that, wait, if we had a Kanye in Nigeria, will there be anybody who could write about him in a way that felt like it was entertaining and was insightful as well?
Yeah.
And I didn't know anybody that I thought that could do that. So I said to myself while I was in school that, you know, what?
Then at that time, you
at the time, yes, of course, yes, at the time, yes, exactly.
Yeah,
and maybe, to be honest, maybe there was, you know, but I just didn't know them.
Yeah.
And so for me, it felt like there was a gap, and that gap needed to be filled by somebody. And so somebody, like I said again, for somebody who was young and at the own height of his own hubris, I tell to myself, why isn't that person Oris? Why can't that person be Oris? So around that time, I decided that, yeah, that if I left, when I left school, I will try to become that guy. So I think between those two incidents, the books and magazines of my early years in school, and this kind of video and the thoughts I had that particular evening. Between those two things, I think that's when my sensibility and the thought that, you know what, I could be this guy kind of got formed. And I said that, you know, when I got out of school, I will try my hands at this thing. Now, as it turns out, I got out of school, finally. And while I was, like I said, while I was working at the hospital, this magazine came calling. So that's how
that started.
Switch happened. Mm. Exactly. But yeah, but I still have my pharmacy license. So let's nobody say about the pharmacy. So let's remember that.
Go back.
You said?
You think you'd ever go back?
I don't know if I would ever show up in a pharmacy with the whole coat and everything, you know, yeah. White coat, and be acting like, you know, I'm the person who invented diphenhydramine and stuff. But I think that we are in Nigeria, and the pharmacy license is an importantly lucrative document to have.
Yeah.
So let's just say that. True. When the time comes, it will be used to make money. That's all I can say.
True. Okay. So, I mean, in all of this, for someone like me, it's a little bit, you know, interesting that there was no mention of William Shakespeare as probably an influence at some point, considering the fact that, of course, you share, you know, you share birthday with the dead. I mean, aside from that, aside from, you know, Hemingway and the names you've mentioned, are there particularly, especially on the Nigerian scene, were there any influences or mentors, so to say? Because, you know, there's a lot of attention as regards, you know, mentorship these days, like, oh, I need a mentor, you need a mentor before you can do this, you need a mentor, I need a mentor, blah, blah, blah. So, but for you, were there any particular mentors or say influence on the Nigerian scene for this?
You know, this is a very, I think it's an important question, but also a very vexing one. You know, there's this thing, I think somebody, because it's Sobello, the American novelist, asked one time, he said, who is the Tolstoy of the Zulus? I mean, the point for him was that, okay, was there anybody of the stature of Leo Tolstoy, the Russian writer, in the culture of the Zulus? And I think there was somebody else, a Black American writer, who responded to that question like years and years after. And he said, Tolstoy is the Tolstoy of the Zulus. The idea being that influence is not geographical. And I think that is especially so now with the, the presence or the prevalence of the internet.
Yeah.
It means that influences are not just a matter of where you are raised. I once wrote in one of these pieces I've written, I think everybody's influence, everybody's philosophy now is both a function of your environment and your browser history. You know, so it feels like, yes, you can get as heavily influenced by the West as you can by other people. But yeah, but to answer the question directly, did I have any local mentors? I think the answer will be no, frankly, on the level of who did I feel like, that whole idea when you're young, like, oh, you need to write like this, like this person.
Yeah.
So the answer was no. But, there's a but. There are people who I had, you know, I can't really remember for business, that I liked when I was younger. I think, you know Tony Khan, who used to be a software writer. Back at Hint. So my mother was a huge fan of social magazines, so she had like stacks of them when I was growing up. So we used to like read all of those things, Tony Khan, David Njoku, Elon Abila, all of those guys.
Yeah.
So I mean, in a way, my foundation, before I became, in quotes, an adult or a teenager in school, that's what been a lot of my reading was from all of those soft sale magazines at the time. Which, so I feel like, yeah, so there's that one. Then two, I think sometime after I discovered Time Magazine and the rest of them, this was when Next started to become a thing.
Before, yeah.
Exactly. And I remember that I used to enjoy Ikide Ekelo was, who is known as Paikide Online, column. Was it a column? I don't know. But anyway, he's writing for Next. I enjoyed it quite a bit. In fact, I enjoyed the Next cultural pages at the time.
The Next had amazing writers. They had amazing.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I enjoyed the culture writing at the time. But yeah, but as far as like influence, like, okay, who I felt I wanted to really, really write like, it was, I will be honest, the Westerners. Hemingway's for me was not even about his style, but mostly about his authority. I didn't think that I had seen anybody who had that kind of like authority and in terms of importance in letters. I think in Nigeria, there was probably, you're either Pro Achebe or Pro Soyinka, I think. And of course, in our own later generation, probably like you, it's Adichie that's the major figure. But I feel like, even with that, people don't talk about them in terms of like the way they write. Maybe in terms of Achebe and Soyinka, yes. But I don't think we've put a lot of, not really taught a lot about Adichie's writing. We talk about her importance. So for me, Hemingway was important because of the way he wrote, the fact of his dry sentences and the way he cut out like extraneous quotes, which for me became like a thing I wanted to do. And of course, it now became important as well. You know, of course, I made a joke one time that if Hemingway was alive, he'd be on YouTube per second. Because he's just that kind of a person, I feel, you know what? He just needed to find a way to get his own ideas and his own energy out. So no local mentors per se, but people that I enjoyed. As far as writing mentors, they were mostly all Westerners. And yes, let me add this. One of the things that I think is important for our generation, you and I, Shegun, I know that you think older than I am, Sha, but let me claim it into my generation. So I think one of the things that's important for us is that, and it's something that I am trying to work on, I want to create a body of work such that anybody who is coming next, like maybe younger generation, who looks to us, will say, you know what, I know that the West, of course, they own the language, and so they've done a lot more with it. But I want them to be able to say, you know what, locally, there are people that we can aspire to. Not just because they are important, but because there were a few people doing it and the only five of them are like there. But because the quality of their writing was so good that I feel like this is somebody I would like to write like. Right. And even if the person decided to choose like a Westerner as his main influence, it's not going to be because there is no alternative here. It's going to be because the person just wants to choose that.
Yeah.
Because I feel like around the time I was growing up, a bunch of the reviews that I was reading, like I said, way before Next, and even after Next, of course, because Next only had a particular short period of time in which it was existed. It meant that, yes, that you needed to find some other kind of like mentors if you wanted, in my own view, to be really, really good at what it is you did as far as writing is concerned. So I think one of the things that I feel like I personally, I am challenged to do is to find a way in which that is not going to be the case for a younger generation. It's a tricky thing to do because, of course, writing is not the most lucrative thing in our country. But I feel like I feel like I have a chance to do it. And I feel like even if it's hard, I think I will try.
I think there's a big need for that, actually, because I mean, you said it, when we were just coming up onto the scene, there were there was like a scarcity of people you could look to for this. I mean, I know that people like Tony Khan, like you said, was writing. Onoshe, I don't know if you know how Onoshe was also. For Punch, he was doing the music, the movies thingy for Punch, and there were also other people. But then maybe also it was also as a result of the fact that there was no internet, or internet was just coming up at that time.
Exactly. The distribution of their writing wasn't quite widespread enough for them to become incredibly important for younger writers.
Yes. So I mean, I think that what you want to do is actually incredibly important, that needs to be done. for that. So let's talk a little. I mean, people know Orisa as regards, you know, your writings on the pages, either the, you know, e-pages or, you know, the paper pages. You know, talk your reviews, your film reviews, your music reviews, your book reviews, and so on and so forth. But then, I mean, what do you have any particularly interesting lesser known stories as a critic? I mean, I'll tell you what I mean. I mean, for a lot of critics operating right now in Nigeria, there's usually that thing. I mean, there's almost always a story that you would have away from the writing that people see, where maybe it's actually, maybe it could be an encounter or an experience with maybe someone whose work you reviewed. I mean, it could be positive, it could be negative, but I mean, away from, you know, what a lot of people see as regards, oh, Orisa has written this, that, what are those stories? Are there any particular stories that, for example, someone is coming onto the scene, wants to write like Orisa, wants to, you know, review films, movies, music like Orisa, but what are those stories? What are the things that, I mean, aside the fact that you probably don't make a lot of money from this, what are the other stories that you can tell?
I can think of a few, okay. But let me see. I mean, I can think of two stories, you know. Let me see. I mean, both of them are, unfortunately, are bad or sad stories. Well, maybe not sad, just, I don't know. But they are not, I don't know, they are not happy stories. But let me see. So let's see. A few years ago, I was invited to a private screening of a film, which, by the way, never happens. But somehow, it happened this one time where it was a private screening, okay, somewhere on the island, okay, with this massively successful filmmaker. And there, while I was there, I met a media, well, should I call her or him? I don't want to give the gender away. A media mogul now. Yeah, but let's see, somebody anyway who owns a very popular media platform. Okay. Now, a few weeks or months, a few months before that meeting, I had written something about a project from Nollywood, and it wasn't very positive because I felt like the project wasn't adequately done. There were things that should have been reflected in the piece, but I didn't think it was well done. And I think the reason was, you know, we have this, I don't know if it's a strange fascination, but we certainly have this thing where we are inclined towards a lot of glamour, sometimes over storytelling, sometimes so I mean, there's just, so that's a major problem I think that we have. So I had said as much in the piece I wrote, and then I got a message, I think a day or two after I had sent it over to the editor, I got a message saying that they were changing direction, and so they couldn't publish the piece I had written. Wow. I was a bit surprised. Well, I don't know if it's a bit. I was quite surprised, frankly.
Yeah.
But of course, there's nothing you can see to distance. Yeah. They won't publish. What can you do? So anyway, I let that go. So while I was there, so now fast forward to this meeting I was talking about, this private screening. So after the film screen, I went over to say hi to the media owner, and he or she said to me that, oh, even before, immediately I said my name. It turned out that, well, he or she actually is familiar with me, or at least with my work. And instantly there was an apology that, oh, you know, sometimes we cannot do this because people call us and they start to say we can, you know, all kinds of show. I was thinking to myself, okay, why exactly are you offering an apology? So I didn't quite connect to what had happened like months ago. Oh. And then, one of those random days, this is now afterwards, so I'm trying to, so these are three different events. There was the letter I got from the editor. Then there was the meeting with the media owner, and then subsequently, I don't remember how that happened, but somehow I think someone sent me a link to something.
Okay.
And within that link, I realized that there was a link to my piece, that very piece.
Okay.
It was actually online.
The one that didn't get published?
Yes. So it was actually online, but there was no content. So if you had the link, so you could see the link with the name of the, how I named the piece as the URL. But if you clicked it, it will show you like an error message, like a 404 or something.
Oh, like it's been taken again.
Exactly. So that's like, so apparently what happened was this, was that it was published. I wasn't aware at the time. And then it was taken down after whoever it was made a comment to the media owner.
Yeah.
So then I realized that, oh, okay. This is why the owner was apologizing to me then, even if I didn't get it.
Yeah.
So clearly, the piece was published. There was a complaint from the makers, I'm sure. And then the media owner directed that the editor did something about it. And so the editor took it down and then sent me that message. So I only got all of these different pieces together much, much later to understand, okay, oh, it's actually what happened. So yes, so that's one of the, so I guess that story just is like about the politics of reviewing in Nigeria.
So that's
the story I have. Then there was another, okay, one of those, I attended a festival a few years ago. And one of the, afterwards, so of course I know a bunch of people from Nollywood, courtesy of writing about the scene for years. So that day, I remember that I was leaving the, I was leaving the hall of the, where the film was being screened. And while I was walking outside, a friend of mine from the industry pointed to me. I didn't realize what he was doing. Pointed to me and said, ah, not the guy be that. You know? And then I was like, why is this guy pointing at me? And then he asked, the other guy was with, asked me to like come closer. And this was like end of the day. And I was like, you know, it's fine. So I came towards the two of them. I didn't know the other guy. I knew the guy who had pointed to me earlier.
Yeah.
So when I walked closer, I realized then that, oh, actually the other guy is a film director.
Oh, okay.
Whose film I'd written about, like, I don't know, maybe like about many months ago, many months before that, but I think the year before, you know. And what had happened was this, was that the guy I knew was pointing out to him that, oh, I was the one who wrote the negative review of his film.
Yeah.
You know, and so it turns out, yeah, so apparently I think they were discussing, I don't know how it's possible, you know, but this is months after, but it appears to me like we're discussing the review, which is many, many months, like the year after.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why. When you were discussing it, and then this other guy, who is my friend, is a mischievous person. So he just called me, just so that he would see what would happen.
Yeah.
You get? Mm-hmm. And so I came closer. And then for the next, I guess, 15 minutes, this director just kept piling into me as to why I was wrong, as to what the review, or even if I was trying to target him, which I wasn't, because I didn't even know him, that it had done him a favor even because he took it to a distributor or something, and then the film got distributed. I'm like, okay, I'm happy for you, bros, you know? But he was just like piling on. No, now, as we're standing there, because of course the two of them belong to Nollywood, and some of the people from Nollywood also know me as well. Soon, the place started to become, wider. So we were like, I think after a while, we were like about 10 people standing there, and they had even broken into factions.
Wow.
People were talking to me, we were one side. People were talking about themselves, about me and my writing. Was
on
And then they were like, I was like, guys, people should leave me now. So I think I came out of that around maybe like 9 or maybe like a few minutes to 10. I'm telling you that we stood outside. This was somewhere in it was Federal Palace Hotel.
Wow.
We stood outside there till 12. And just me just standing there watching these guys pretty much just pile on and pile on and pile on and pile on like this guy who was writing reviews about our films. And well, some said he okay, so one of them said something that was really, 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 really funny to me. He was like, you know what, that he's a terrible critic, but he's a great writer.
Oh, wow.
You know, yeah, it was funny to me because it was just like, guys, people should leave me now, you know. So anyway, he did all of this, piled on. After they got tired, because I was trying to defend myself, after a while I just gave up and said, oh, guys, don't say anything, like, shall let us finish and let us leave here. So anyway, end of the day, me and, I don't know, two of them finally ended up in one bar somewhere. And that's how that night ended. So anyway, that's another story from my days working in Hollywood, or working around Hollywood.
Nollywood.
Oh yeah, there's a more recent story.
Okay.
Well, not really a story, but an incident. So recently, myself and one of my business partners needed to go and speak to a digital bank about a particular project. And while we were there, of course, we needed to introduce ourselves to the CEO / MD of the company. And then he called in his marketing and communications. I mean, he called in two people anyway, two of his workers into the meeting. And when we introduced ourselves to them, you're like, oh, that's Oris. And I think this is probably the only advantage I've ever gotten from writing about Nollywood was the fact that when I wanted to talk a business deal over with like an MD/CEO, two of his staff happens to have known my writer, at least, well, knew me from my writing.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that was, I think, one good thing that all of these years of this thankless, payless job gave me was the fact that these two people happened to know me. So I'm like, you know, so yeah, so that's, I think, yes, of the many, many terrible stories I have about writing about Nollywood, that's probably the one good story that I have, and I hope it works out differently. The project that is.
Yeah, hopefully he does. So pretty much finally, Let me ask this. I mean, for someone like me, I probably know some of the answers to this question. But then for the person who just reads, you know, your review and, you know, doesn't really understand how come you have so much insight, how come it feels like you have, you know, so much, you know, knowledge as regards how a good film should be made or how a good performance should, you know, be put up or how a good piece of music, you know, should be put together and so on and so forth. So for you, what informs, if you watch a film now or you listen to an album, and then you want to write about it, what's your thought process like? What are the dots or what are the boxes that you would think that this should tick? And, you know, how do you go about, I mean, how does it come out, you know, when you want to write these reviews? What's your thought process like? And what's like the other processes that are involved, that, you know, beyond your thinking and so on?
Let me figure out how to answer this one. I think the short answer, I'll give a short and a long answer. I think the short answer is it varies for the different projects one is pretty much consuming. I think one of the things people don't realize is that the same ingredients that make up a good film could also make up a bad film, which is strange, you know. Yeah. But sometimes it's not about it's like a good soup. You might still add the curry maybe curry and soup is not quite the same. You might still add the maggi or add the salt, add the fish, add the nutmeg and everything. But maybe in different quantities. And then for one pot of soup, it's excellent. For the other, not quite so. So yeah, so it depends. So yeah, but the long answer is this, that I think everybody that comes to a particular piece of art is coming with their own sensibility and their own knowledge and what they know about it and what's the kind of person that they are. For me, the primary thing for me I look for is I like excellence. I like the feeling that you did your homework. I want to see your film and know that, okay, the actors were helped because, of course, I'm one of those guys who favors the author theory about the director being like this one in particular. with the director being pretty much the guy who has the most say on the artistic expression of the film. Sometimes the producer in Nigeria, but most times I think it's usually the director or somewhere between them. So for me, I'm thinking, have you helped your actors accomplish what they need to accomplish? You can, I think for me, who has seen a bunch of films, that's the right thing. I think it's like one of the important things is the knowledge bit comes from consuming this thing a lot. I've been seeing films since I was, I don't know, quite young.
Yeah.
And I have been thinking about them. I think more important is to not just to see them, but to think about them.
Mm-hmm.
I realized now that even when I was young, I was remembering names of like strange people. For instance, I think when did The Matrix come out? About 2020, I don't know, a while ago. 98 or is it 2000? I can't remember now. But yeah, but even at that time, for instance, I knew the name of the fight choreographer of that film, which is not something that at least kids my age care about. You know, you just watch the action and you're like, that's fine. But even then, I knew that guy. I knew that he was the one who also did the choreography for the Ang Lee film. What's the name of that film? Conscious Tiger, Hidden Dragon. You know, so I mean, I had that information. So when you come to things like this, you need to know a lot about the film, about film itself. So you read about the French theorists, all them, André Bazin, all of those guys. You would watch the American B movies. You will know, what's his name, Van Damme. You would also know about Woody Allen. These are like people who are working in vastly different spaces, even if, of course, these are both Hollywood American film products.
You also know Tyler
but
Perry.
Woody Allen is not.
What? I said, you also know Tyler Perry.
Exactly, right? All of this is like what informs the kind of person you are, what you're bringing to the table. Okay, so you know all of these people. One. Two, you watch the films and you're thinking, okay, what is it, good, is it bad? That's one question. But sometimes even about is it good or is it bad? Is it like, for me, I've already said that one of the things I want to do whenever I'm writing is to make the reader think. If you've seen the film, if you're talking about film, if you've seen the film before, I want you to be able to look at it with renewed, with newer, fresher eyes, like new insight. That you think, okay, the fact that, I mean, let's use Hollywood for instance. The fact that you watch a bunch of horror movies and the first person to die is the black guy, do you think he says something about the racial climate of the US? If you see a Nigerian film where a bunch of movies by this same director has featured an evil wife, what does it say about how he views women? You might not say anything much about it, but it's something to at least draw your attention to the viewer to say, okay, you know what? Maybe it's worth to think about, worth thinking about. If someone has done a film where, this is a real life case, where a bunch of people are poor and they have this scheme or scam against people who are rich by supposedly corrupt practices.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, the rich people finally get a chance to take revenge on all of the poor people that are stole from them. What does it say about politics of that film?
Yeah.
You understand? So for me, these are like some of the things I like to think about. Of course, it's not just about watching film, but also knowing a little bit about politics.
Yeah.
About knowing how your world works, how the class structure in Nigeria, for instance, is like. What does the gender divide? What is it like now? What do they talk about, you know? What is feminism now? Is it like something that favors women? Is it something that favors a particular class? I mean, you know, these kind of thoughts. So it's like connecting all of these thoughts together in my head that I think I do it almost organically. And then the most important part as a writer is like, okay, you've had the thoughts. How best can you express these thoughts you've had? And that's where the other part of the question comes in. Have you spent time learning the craft of writing? Do you know just the basic things, where is the comma supposed to be? Where is the full stop supposed to be, you know?
Yeah.
Do you know that, okay, maybe you should use a short sentence here to make it more punchy, a long sentence here to make complex thoughts more palatable to the reader? You know, all of those kinds of things. So it's a couple of things, you know, but the things are like, for me, I'm not learning them right there. I'm thinking right there, but I have the skills developed over the years. So when I come to the page, it's just a function for, okay, how do you say this? Then again, sometimes you have a word count, or sometimes you're like, these days people don't really like to read long, long stuff. Do you want to make it 700 words? Do you want to go into in depth and like do 1,000 or 1,500 words? So So these are decisions that it's hard to explain to you how everything comes together. Except that I know that there are several parts. There's the film knowledge part. There's the particular person's who's watching, whose work you're watching.
Yeah.
There's that part. And there's the part of your own part about the craft of writing. Mm. How, what makes a successful review is how you manage to bring all of these things into being into a particular piece of writing. I've always said that a chunk of what I do is entertainment. You know, I want to give insight. I want to provide some kind of thoughts for you, but I want to do it in the most entertaining way possible. That you're reading, you're like, oh, you enjoy what you're reading, but you also enjoy it.
Yeah.
Also makes sense. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So yeah, that's pretty much what I do. So the same thing too for music. And because I'm a very word-driven guy, I really like words and I like sentences. I'm always also thinking about the songs. If you're thinking about a song, how does it cohere? If like I had the popular Wizkid song, that was in my bed from his second album, Ayo, where a part of the song is talking about a girl being in his bed. And towards the end, it's about Faruk Eleni, and then he starts with the best thing in the chat. So there is a disconnect there. But I mean, it could still work because I think as a culture, at least as a music consuming culture, we've come to believe that the most important thing for a song is the vibe. How does it make you feel? You want to dance to it. So that could still work. But I also think that it is also in my place too, especially this, since at the time Whiskey was coming out, was one of the first people who were trying to like really pioneer that style of artful nonsense where it doesn't have to make a lot of sense, at least in his generation, you know. But still, because if you think about it, people like Wandeko, who is pretty much in my own view his predecessor, he had a more cohesive way of writing lyrics. So what is the entire song could mean one thing for Wandeko, even if it was still groovy to dance to. Whiskey showed up and Whiskey pretty much said, you know what, that was not something that we needed to do so much. And he's been very successful doing that. But I also want to be the person who says, you know what, this is what he has done. You might like it or you might not like it, but this is what he has done. Maybe you should think about it. So that's pretty much what I do when I'm thinking about songs. Like, okay, this is this part. Then, okay, the sounds themselves, are they new? Are they novel? Or is it just rehitting something you've heard before? One of the things about pop music is that it dwells on familiarity.
Yeah.
If a song was popular before and somebody just tweaks one small thing about it, chances that other song becomes a hit as the first one is really about 80%. Because according to one research I read about, it takes people like 3 listens to understand if they like a song. What normally happens is, so what people now started to do in the US, at least in the West, is to like, they'll repeat the same pattern of sounds like 3 times early in the song. You get, so that's the trick. You get into like ensuring that at least a song gets a high chance of becoming
of sticking.
You get exactly. So yeah, so as a critic, yes, my own is like, how can I convey to you how this is being achieved? Look at techno. Techno is a guy who I think I wrote one review a while ago where I was saying that a lot of his songs are pretty much just a single word because techno thrives on simplicity. You get, and it's like, okay, after a while, it's like he doesn't, he involves, of course, there's a girl's name inside. They're just certain things that he does.
Yeah,
I feel like as a critic, you are like thinking about those things, okay, like about the patterns in which this guy's trying to achieve what he's trying to achieve and telling your audience.
Yeah.
Of course, when you're dancing to the song as a listener, you're not probably thinking about it. But I used to make the joke that, look, I can be in a club dancing to this jam, doing my terrible shocky to it, at the same time figuring out how it has achieved its effect. So, but of course, enjoying it and writing about it, about the same thing. So when you now sit there, you're like, okay, how do you convey all of those thoughts you've had into a piece of writing? And that's where the writing skill itself comes into play. And it's a work in progress. I'm still trying to figure out how to do it the best way I can.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think, there's some success there. That's about it.
Oh, okay. So I wouldn't forgive myself if I do not ask you this. I mean, we talked about your your experience, your stories as a critic, as a writer, away from the pages, away from what people see. But then, I mean, you've traveled wide. You've been to festivals, you've been to conferences, you've been to screenings and so on outside the country. Are there any particular stories, lesser known stories, about, of course, not your personal, you know, experiences basically, but about, you know, your craft, about your writing, about the fact that you're a critic. Are there any stories outside the country, or maybe, oh, this is a critic from Nigeria, or oh, this, are there any stories around that?
there are many stories around us. Maybe I should have said one of these. Can I think of one at the moment? Okay, yeah. There is this, I think the very first time I was outside of the country for a film festival, I was on the queue with this guy. This was in South Africa, in Durban. There was this queue I was on. I think I was talking to somebody on the phone or something. I can't remember her name. Or maybe I just made a comment. But somebody in front of me, a tall white guy, turns back and says, Nigerian. And I'm like, yes. And I'm like, how did you know? And then he's like, oh, just the way you sound. No, I think he said, just the way you sound, your accent or something. And I was thinking to myself, because up until that moment, I felt like I have a very neutral accent.
Yeah.
Neutral accent, you know. Like, I feel like in Nigeria, we have Yoruba accent, Igbo accent, Benin accent, Hausa, you know, all of those things, you know. But there's not something like a Nigerian accent. But clearly, that's not really true, right? Because even if I think in Nigeria, I don't think people are able to place where exactly I come from. But this guy could tell that, you know, this guy is Nigerian. Anyway, we started to talk, and then he was a director producer now? I don't remember. But yeah, we started to talk, and he was like, oh, what do I do? Of course, I'm at a film festival. And then I said I was a critic, and he was like, what? Critic for Nigeria? No, no, critic. I was like, yeah. So, of course, his impression was that, wait, do they have critics in Nigeria? You know, because, and then he said this one, he said, but that for him, the scene is so chaotic that half of the critic was there.
Oh, wow.
And then, of course, I had to spend all of this time to explain to him how it might work. And to be fair, at the time, I didn't know a bunch of other critics. This was in 2014.
Yeah.
So, I mean, 5-6 years ago, a while ago. Anyway. So, I wasn't quite, to be honest, he had a point.
Mm-hmm.
But I was existing as the person who was the objection to his point. So I didn't try to tell him, you know what, I know it's not quite popular, but yeah, actually we do exist. All of these years later, I hope he's changed his mind. But yeah, that was the thing that happened. That was in South Africa, I think. I have a story about Germany. Why? Let's see. I don't know. I think for Germany, it's just pretty much, they are very, this is Europe, they are very used to Francophone African cinema.
Yeah.
Where everybody's kind of calabash. In fact, there's the derisive term for it, but it's cinema calabash. but I think that for them, the one is just, it's always about their surprise. But I think Germany is an interesting culture, frankly. I think they are probably the most, at least Berlin, which is their, I guess, culture capital. It's very, very welcoming. There's a lot of, I guess, black people or Africans in the country. So for them, they hide their surprise pretty much. Yes, I think you can see on their face, they're like, okay, this apples there.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they are not quite as vocal as, say, the Americans are, where they're like, even they have absolutely no idea that Africa even has like a cinema culture. I can't remember a particular story about you now. I'm sure when after this interview I remember, but at the moment it just feels like my head is pretty much blank about my European experiences with film writing.
Okay, so thank you very much. I think we've had a very, very robust conversation. The reason why I started this podcast is also because I felt that there was a need for some form of documentation so that, you know, people can, you know, listen to this episode, for example, and, you know a little more about Oris. So if someone wants to write about Oris tomorrow, there could be some insight into what, you know, Oris does, why he does it, and how he does what he does. So thank you very much, Oris, for being on this episode with me. Hopefully we get to do other episodes and maybe where we, you know, talk about other films that have, you know, shaped the history of Nollywood one way or another. Thank you very much, man.
All right, thank you, Segun. Thank you so much. I respect the what you're trying to do with this, because I feel like it's important that, in fact, to be honest, a lot of what criticism is actually documenting how we felt about this particular thing when it came out. Yeah. I mean, talk about this particular and to like put down the history. So yeah, thanks so much for having me on the podcast.
Yeah.